Let's get started again, please. And I guess, who's the first one up here? Michael.
Oh, sorry. Slack in here.
Chairman Hilton, other members of the commission and staff, good evening. My name is Michael Sackett. I'm a professional land surveyor and licensed professional forester. I live in Solon, and I am co-owner of Sackett and Brake, located in Skowhegan. I am here as a consultant and contractor during the 2008 Kibbe construction project. In May of 2008, my firm was hired by Reed & Reed as general contractor for TransCanada. We topographically reviewed the preliminary design for the access roads and made recommendations on movement that reduced the amount of a road to be constructed by well over 3 miles. Subsequent to this work, we were hired by Sargent Corporation to calculate, locate, and mark the 44 miles of vegetation clearing. I committed half of my 16-person staff to this project. I hired two additional main firms to help with this project to meet its strict completion deadlines. 10 to 15 persons were employed on this project daily for 6 months, for which my firm was compensated well over $500,000. I purchased new equipment. I rented houses in Eustis and office space and accommodations. Myself and my employees purchased supplies, fuel, and food in the Eustis area and ate at a variety of local establishments. I've heard that for every dollar spent in the community, it circulates 7 times before leaving or wherever it goes. This being the case, $3.6 million was circulated between Franklin and Somerset counties during the summer of 2008, just for the little part my firm had in the Kibbe project. I'm a strong advocate for the reduction of our dependence on U.S.-produced and foreign oil. We desperately need to reduce the size of our carbon footprint. The previous Kibbe project and the now proposed expansion on CISC do just that. They reduce our dependence. They reduce our carbon footprint. Again, I represent a very small piece of this environmentally friendly project, but I urge you to recommend a timely approval for construction. Thank you.
Dave?
Commissioners, staff, ladies and gentlemen, my name is David Miller. I'm from Lexington Township, and I've been asked to come here and speak on behalf of a group of sportsmen that is made up of trappers and guides. We're an independent group called Carabasset Valley Trappers. We trap the area from the end of the mountains down near North Anson all the way up to the Canadian border. We've done some limited research. There's not much on mammals. There's a lot of research been done on the birds and bats. And the energy wind power people have done a tremendous amount of work on that. And that's well covered, but the other mammals are not. Research by us has shown that domestic animals have died when they're confined in areas where there's wind turbines. There was 400 goats in Taiwan died in the last couple of years. There's a cattle rancher in Ontario, Canada, that his calves have been, he's had stillborns, calves have been deformed and stuff when they're confined where these low frequency sounds are. Talking with various professionals, I'll call them biologists, here in Maine and other places, they say, well, the animals will move. Well, that's probably true, but where are they going to move to? When wild animals go into another area that's not their home range, they fight, and somebody wins, somebody loses. A fair amount of people who live in the unincorporated townships make a portion of their money and their income by trapping. Some of them make it full-time, a very few of them, by trapping, ADC trapping the rest of the year. Quite a few guides have talked to me. They will not come to these hearings and speak or write newspaper articles because they have indications that they may lose their bear baits and et cetera by the property owners that do the leases. But the bottom line is there's a real concern about the mammals, fur bears and big game animals, being moved out of their range into other ranges. It's going to cause problems with population explosions in certain areas. There's going to be a reduction in the animals. Another thing that's been brought up since fishing season started is the effect of the hydrology of the mountains being impacted by the construction and deep bedrock blasting, causing the springs and small feeder streams to be affected, possibly raising the water temperatures, feeding the larger streams and rivers that have the trout and salmon in them. That is what they asked me to say, and that's all I've got to say. Thank you.
Earl?
Good evening. My name is Earl Wyman, Jr. I'm a selectman for the town of Eustis. And first, I'd like to thank you people for coming, taking the time to come to our area where this project is so important to us. I've heard a lot of comments tonight, and I had a bunch of stuff all prepared, but I wrote down a few notes that I'm going to go over instead. 20 plus years, a lot of these same environmental groups have been preaching clean, renewable resources. They didn't want companies to come into the state of Maine that was going to pollute our state and cause a devastating impact. 20 years plus they've been preaching this. Now that it's here, wind power is an option. And don't get me wrong, I do support this project. You've heard all the beneficial aspects of this project monetary-wise for money. I'm not here to speak on that. I've spoke on that before. You've heard enough. What it is now, it's every excuse possible to get something else, to do something else, to do away with this, and I don't understand it. This is the right time. This is the right place. The visual impact of this site is minimal at best. My family owns 280 acres of land on the backside of Eustis Ridge, and I have some high points and ridges on that land. Two of them point right towards this wind power project. And on a nice, clear day, I can see several of the wind towers. But I guarantee you I can take you up there on a nice, clear day and have you look around, and you will have a hard time finding them. They do not stick out like a sore thumb. I would not be in favor of a project that's in a close proximity to homes or communities where these towers towered over your whole community. That isn't the right place for them. This place is the right place for them. And animals. I've heard a lot of talk about animals. Animals are smart. They adapt better than human beings adapt to their environment. I've heard mention of the devastating aspects of this few miles of ridgeline that they're going to disrupt and tear down and blow up. What about the hundreds and thousands of miles of forestry operations going on in our community today, all throughout this state, not just this state, every state? There are animals. I worked in the woods for 15 years. There are all kinds of different animals, wildlife, bird species, moles, voles, whatever you want to call them. They're all there. When these logging operations come in, now they're all mechanical. You talk about noise. When these operations clear those areas, the animals come back. I can take you to places that's been clear cut 10, 15 years ago. They're thriving with animals. Animals are smart. They adapt. I've heard a lot about the talk of the Bicknell thrush and the fur-leafed forest. I wasn't really familiar with them, so I asked a couple retired wildlife people that's worked in the area since the 1950s. They say, yes, they are probably on the endangered species list, but he said there's a lot of areas that people haven't been to know that they're there now. He said they've traveled this area. I've lived in this area for 57 years. There's only two other people that's gotten up here that spoke that's lived here longer than I have. And I'll tell you, if this was a project that was detrimental to our environment, I'd be death against it, and I know our community would raise tons of money to oppose it. It's not the case. TransCanada is a good company. Their environmental practices have been impeccable. You have people bringing, you have state wildlife people bringing people up to this site to show them what should be done in their area and how it should be done, because this has been done the way it should be done. It's been the way it's been done, the way it's been asked of them, and they have done it. Last, stall tactics. I'm getting tired of these organizations that oppose this project that change their spokespersons and say he no longer represents us. So can we have two or three more weeks to drag this on to get them up to speed on this project? It's pure and simple. It's stall tactics. And lastly, respect. I have a lot of respect for the people who spoke here tonight. Karen Pease has been a friend of mine for years. I have a lot of respect for her opinion and the way she thinks. I don't disrespect her at all. But please, I'm asking the people not to get up here, and this doesn't reflect her, and tell things that aren't the truth. People have been up here at the last hearings I've been to every one of them. You've seen me enough. You can't forget my ugly looking face. People have gotten up and said things that they could see these places from their homes, their projects. They can't. And like I said, the visual aspect is minimal. The sound, I don't believe you're going to hear it. Perfect example, Sugarloaf Mountain Corporation at times runs over 150 snow guns up here on the mountain. Have you ever stood next to a snow gun and listened to it howl? It is in no way, shape, or form. I know you've people been to the site. You've stood underneath the wind towers. Were you able to talk amongst each other and hear everybody? You couldn't do that next to a snow gun. And when those 150 snow guns are running up here, you cannot hear them at the bottom of the mountain. Thank you for your time.
Wendy?
Hi, my name is Wendy Wyman, and I'm a resident of Stratton. And basically, I just wanted to get up and tell you that I was in support of the CISC application. Everything that TransCanada has done so far has been very professional. They've been very forthright with any information that anybody has requested. At times, they've come forward before people have even probably thought of asking that question. They've been active in our community. I've been at coffee with my senior citizen lady friends, and they'll come in, and the ladies will start asking them questions, and they'll sit right there and take their time to answer anything anybody wants to know. I feel that they've been very professional in the way they've conducted their business so far. We're looking forward to the towers being built, or I'm looking forward to the towers being built this summer. And I don't feel that this application is going to be any kind of an impact that's going to be detrimental to the area. Thank you for your time.
All right, Paul Williamson, who I named, had to leave, so he decided not to testify tonight. He'll be providing his testimony in writing. I was negligent and skipped over David Maxwell's name. David, you care to come up and speak next? And then after David, those who have indicated their wish to speak would be Emily Posner, Gilly Hitchcock, Will Niels, and I think it's Mr. McKay. Dana or David or Dave? I apologize.
Thank you very much. My name is David Maxwell, and I do want to say a few words tonight. As someone who has owned property.
Where are you from?
I own property in Eustis. I have a home on Flagstaff Lake, and I've owned two properties here. And I had a property on Eustis Ridge. And I first came to this area in 1969. So when Earl Wyman Jr., was talking about his father. I knew his father many years ago. I'm not new to the area. What brought me here to these mountains was the fact that they represented a wilderness experience that I couldn't find anywhere else. Living in Boston, I would come up here on the weekends before I finally bought property up here in 1973, bought property for the first time, would bring my family, would bring my friends, and they would bring other friends to this area. And we came here because of the Western Mountains and the beauty in these mountains and the experience that these mountains give, which is almost spiritual in a certain way. You cannot find this experience, certainly not down on Beacon Street in Boston. So Maine has always had that kind of an appeal for me. And I have spent lots of the economics has been discussed. As someone who's been coming up here for this many years and knowing many others who come here, I'm a member of the Wing community up here in Stratton. I can tell you that we come here because of this fact that this is a beautiful area. It's relatively unspoiled. We know that wood has been taken out of here that regenerates. But the whole idea of windmills, I find rather vile for several reasons. The first reason is that they portend to be something that they are not. They say they are providing clean energy, but we've already heard testimony tonight contrary to that point. To erect these windmills, you have to rake the tops of mountains and disturb the habitat in these areas to threaten the ecology of these areas. And it seems to me that that alone ought to be a cause for LIRC's concern. As I understand it, LIRC is to be concerned about maintaining the natural resources in Maine. And certainly these mountains are a precious resource. In fact, I think LIRC, to my disappointment, has violated its own policies. Previously, you said that sensitive areas above, I think it was 2,800 feet, could not be developed. And certainly these areas are now being considered for development and have been developed. So I question the value of LIRC at this point in its decision-making. You let go forward previously this project that destroyed a large portion of a mountain range. And for what reason? There has been no economic data that's been presented thus far to show that this is going to benefit the state of Maine. There's been some temporary benefit that we've had testimony here tonight, but certainly that's not long-term. There's been a lot of money passed around from one hand to the other in terms of these organizations and groups. And this is a poor area, and I can understand the people wanting to have some sort of financial base in this area. But windmills will not provide it. And in fact, they will be a distraction to economic future development here, certainly in terms of tourism. So that's a major concern. And if you do a little research on this, and I don't know how much you people have actually investigated wind power and their ultimate impact on the energy needs in this country, but at best, if all of the areas that potentially could be developed for wind power were developed, they would provide at best 2% of the energy needs in this country. So I don't think it's worth destroying our mountaintops here in Maine. That's a natural resource that is here. You will not bring it back. And I urge you not to support this proposal to go forward with the development of Sisk Mountain. Thank you.
Emily? All right, Ms. Hitchcock. I don't know if I'm pronouncing your first name Gilly or Jilly. Sorry.
It's Gilly. Thank you.
Gilly, okay.
Thank you, and thank you for all of you for listening to all of this testimony tonight. This is a lot of work, and I really appreciate the process. I have never been a part of it, so I appreciate all of your effort because it's a lot of work, I'm sure. My name is Gilly Hitchcock. And I speak to you as a resident of Carrabassett Valley. I am a member of the Franklin County Economic Development Board. I am a lifelong resident of Maine. I'm the daughter of a papermaker. I have a small business in Farmington. And maybe more importantly, or most importantly, is I'm a mother of two young sons. My passion is creating opportunities in Maine. I work in an industry, the paper industry, that is downsizing regularly and undergoing major change. Maine had lots of opportunities in the state until the downturn of manufacturing, and now we find that we're educating and training some of the brightest engineers and professionals who are leaving the state in droves for opportunities because they don't have the opportunities here in the state for jobs. Maine was, of course, once a leader in papermaking. In fact, it was the job that I was able to get when I graduated from college some years ago. But now we are in a position to be a significant player in creating alternative energy options as a state. We have committed ourselves to helping solve our energy problems in different areas. We have an exciting venture in Old Town. It's producing ethanol out of wood chips, a pulp mill. We're looking up and down the coast at tidal energy. We're investigating offshore wind turbines. Statewide, we are making commitments to be part of the solution. We have a national urgency. We have an administration nationally that is encouraging us to create alternative energy. We have a state that has become committed to do so in the alternative energy field. We have a corporate citizen, such as TransCanada, who has proven to be committed to the community. Our colleges, our vocational institutions, our high schools are working to train our young people in composite building, which is a component of wind and turbine technology. We have a great opportunity here as a state to become a part of the planning and the construction, a part of the manufacturing. These are all such important ramifications of becoming an alternative energy leader in the nation. My passion is jobs, and my passion is the youth of Maine, including my very own two young sons, who I hope will also be able to find an opportunity to live and work successfully in the state. I hope that we will allow TransCanada to continue their wind power projects. They are responsible, committed community members. We've heard that time and again tonight. Their industry is a soft, clean industry, and it does support our national energy crisis. I am proud to be a resident of a community that is part of the solution to the national energy crisis and not part of the problem. I applaud you and thank you very much for having the original foresight to see the benefits of the Kibbe Project. And I hope that we'll continue to allow this company the flexibility to expand and add more jobs and benefit Franklin County. And I hope that you will approve their petition. And I thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Okay. Will? And after Will is McKay, friends of Saddleback. And after McKay is Kevin Clark. And is Emily back? You're back? Okay, Emily,
yes, ma'am.
Sorry. Kind of took you out of order. We'll get you up here.
Hi, my name's Will Neals. I'm a lifetime resident of Knox and Waldo County, 23 years in Appleton, 10 in Lincolnville, and now in Hope. I've heard a lot of conscientious citizens, people who apparently grew up here and live here. Tonight, I've also heard some people who have transitioned here from other places. And I myself, of course, come from the other side of the state. I fully recognize that. But I also think it's important when we think about these things to recognize that there are repercussions which may be very long-lasting and deep-seated and may end up having effects all over the state. If we do things without thinking them through clearly and recognizing the potential long-term effects. Tourism. Coming from the coast, of course, tourism is a big thing down there. We've been experiencing a major plummet, actually, in the tourist dollars due to the bad economy and all. And so, therefore, it becomes even more competitive, needless to say, to get the little cash that's still left around. We're also seeing, it's interesting, in a lot of the smaller coastal communities down there, we're also seeing a lot of predatory businesses that come in now because they have financial resources. And while local business owners may be failing and their businesses may be up for grabs, their buildings are up for grabs, people are taking advantage of the opportunity to move in. We've seen that a lot in the Mid-Coast with Linda Bean and her lobster rolls. So anyways, I guess what I'm getting at here is this whole good citizenship thing. I heard some people say they're very good corporate citizens. They were describing these folks from Canada here. and I think that the problem with words is that it's not enough to just say something is the way it is. You have to actually quantify it with facts and with actions. And once again, I'd like to call attention to the fact that these people, this company from Canada, TransCanada, is doing the tar sands project. And in the tar sands project, they have basically had to remove indigenous people, members of a Cree nation who lived there for hundreds, if not possibly thousands of years, in the same area, a very small community, 500 people, who were displaced to build this giant pipeline. It was a $1 billion project. I know it may seem gargantuan by our standards. This is just a $1 million project. Or a $100 million project, but still, the point is that if we're going to talk about good citizenship, then we have to evaluate whether or not they actually are good citizens. And it's very, very important that we recognize when we're talking about what our children need in this state and the vision that we would like to articulate to our children. I have no children at this time. I hope someday to have children, but I want to clarify, I am not a parent. But nonetheless, I have many friends who have children. And I've helped many, many times with my buddies and their younger siblings, trying to instill values that respect the community ways, some would say the old ways, and recognize our reliance in this state, at least because it's rural, on what we can effectively work with from nature in a sustainable fashion. That's the key, of course, the sustainable fashion part. and I think what is most concerning to me with some of the, I guess it was interesting in the presentation that Toby, I think it made earlier, it was, I counted up around $650,000 on the board there, and that's a $100 million project, and of course a lot of that, right, like what, $60 million is going to be the taxpayer cash, the federal stimulus money for the green jobs and stuff. So, I mean, really when you think about it, $600,000 out of $60 million is, it's not really that much trickling down here to the local community, though I do understand that it no doubt would have a very, very positive effect. And I'm sure that that must have motivated the testimony of the people tonight, and I appreciate that. Growing up in Appleton, where there were 12 people in my graduating class in grade school, needless to say, I can recognize what it's like to grow up in a small town without a lot of economic opportunities. It's very hard for poor people and rural people to survive in this state, and so I fully recognize that. But I also feel like, unfortunately, when we become addicted to hand-me-downs, cash or otherwise, from people and companies from away, it doesn't actually maintain the sustainable self-reliant skills, which this state is, of course, known for, and which many of us pride ourselves on. In fact, it's sort of counterintuitive to teaching the traditional values and the traditional ways. But back to that tourism thing. If it's tourism, and if we can make a bunch of money, though, of course, Mr. Carter claims that they figured out in the UK you couldn't really make any money off the tourism with the wind power over there, and they had to shut down their sites. But let's say, for example, you could do that. I was thinking another potential tourist site nearby, though it's a little bit away, of course, would be the mill down in Madison. Potentially that would have similar tourist qualities for people if they want to go see industrial sites. I guess I'm gonna try to wrap up with a basic point. For the taxpayers of this country and this state right now, I think it's fair to say that a lot of people are scared. I think most people, to one degree or another, are scared. I think a lot of people are desperate. And desperation is a really bad time to make crucial life decisions. I think there's probably a lot of people who got married at the wrong time because they got pregnant. So then they're desperate. Well, you get, and then, well, geez, wow, how'd that go? Well, maybe it worked great for some, but I think quite a few people I know it hasn't worked out so well with. And that's the thing about desperation is that, of course, when you find communities that are desperate for economic development, any money trickling into the community at all, then it's much easier, I think, to manipulate them. And I think what's really scary for me personally right now is that it's extremely fiscally irresponsible, and really it's fundamentally unpatriotic, actually, to enable a giant corporation from Canada to suck up this giant bonus of federal green, which I dispute the use of, also green energy, stimulus funds, and distribute them to the stock owners and the bloated CEO salaries and executive salaries of a company that isn't even from this country. I think it's fundamentally irresponsible. I think it's really, really precisely the kind of practice which we have to evaluate as a community, not just in this state but around the nation, and recognize that this is how we've gotten into this mess, is giving away the hard-earned dollars of the taxpayers of this country and this state to people who fundamentally don't deserve them. And I think it is a scam, and I think it's a really, really, really cynical scam and manipulation of communities which obviously need inspiration at this time. I feel that these communities need inspiration that's generated from their communities, not from corporations, which have a proven track record to disrespect the needs of a local community, as they do with the indigenous in Northern Alberta and the tar sands projects. What these communities need is self-initiated economic development. They do not need economic development which comes from away, comes here, dictates the terms and the engagement, and then goes away when the money has been made and the tax dollars have been skimmed and scammed, and leaves people wondering where all the jobs were and why it is things didn't work out like those folks from away said. And the last thing is, I heard quite a few people at the beginning say that we need energy. That's true. With the addictive personality of the American consumer at this time, we do need energy. Unfortunately, we do not actually need as much as we think we need. It is extremely irresponsible for the citizens of this country, for that matter, the citizens of Europe, to be exploiting the natural resources of the world at the rate at which we are. I consider myself part of this process, despite the fact I've lived my whole life without running water, and the majority of it without any electricity, and have tried as hard as I can to not create more of a dependence on things from outside of the state. But we do need energy, that's correct. What we most need is to learn how to adapt to not needing as much energy. And you know, I've done a lot of political activism around this country. I've stood on the tops of mountain ranges that have been totally decimated by mountaintop removal in the western part of the state of Virginia. I've watched retired people who lived their whole lives, worked hard, and retired to their family lands cry because of what coal companies had done down there to their family cemeteries that had been there for 150 years. I've seen the desert scapes, and I know it's different because it's not the same thing, but the reality is it's a manifestation of the same attitude. It's a manifestation of the same disregard for what obviously we need to regard much more, which is what nature has done in our absence for thousands of years, which is self-regulate. And I feel like if we continue to just plod on through this world and through this beautiful state and destroy as much as we can for the almighty buck, we're going to have more fiascos and extremely, extremely dangerous situations similar to the offshore drilling disaster which we're facing right now. Realistically, the wind turbines are not that, but we have to recognize that we are responsible for the mistakes we make. And I believe continuing with this scale of industrial wind turbine exploitation and destruction to otherwise not destroyed natural wildlife and important environmental corridors is fundamentally irresponsible. Thank you.